Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents A Cold War by Renee Jaeger and Michael Anderley, narrated by Emily Beresford. Chapter 1. On the castle battlements they sing, the crows who shall feast when the dawn breaks. Below the dead hour scoured. A cry lifts into the air, a wail opens the earth, and they are buried with the tears shed upon them. The fallen are scorned. The fallen are mourned. Song of the Fallen of Ireland.
It's been 3 months, Morgan. You shouldn't stay cooped up in this castle forever.
I turned from the fire to face my friend and personal researcher, Douglas Velez, who had just entered my study. It was a dull and rainy day at Rooksmont Castle, and I was more than happy to be sequestered indoors, despite the truth in Douglas's words. 3 months could feel like a long time to be in one place and not go anywhere else. This was especially true when, right before I hid myself away, as Douglas called it, I had been trotting all over the world, fixing some of its biggest problems. It felt good to be back in England and on a huge estate in the countryside, but my mind was still spinning from all I had recently experienced. I lived with memories plaguing me. Sometimes my mind took me to the Brazilian jungle where I had been ambushed by drug cartel soldiers. Sometimes it was the South Pacific where the chemical plant blew up. Other times it was Africa, and I was standing over the burning corpse of the revolutionary general I had killed and thrown into a fire. Every morning, however, I woke and relived the horrors of Russia, standing outside of a conquered city, looking into pits full of naked, dead bodies. I shook my head to rid it of the cascading images. 3 months had not yet been enough time to recover. Douglas's expression was full of concern, and I knew why. He knew what I had experienced, because I had told him. But no one but me would understand how it had felt to stand there with thousands of dead before me. No one could understand the weight that had been placed upon me then. No one but me, and the 3 women who are now part of me. I responded with a forced smile. "You know I haven't read everything in here, Velez. Why would I leave when I still have so much to learn?" I gestured to the shelves all around the study, piled with books that Douglas had organized while I was gone. Douglas frowned. He and I both knew my reply was a cover-up.
"It's my job to read, Morgan. I'll pass along what I think will help you."
I glanced at the giant black wolf who lay at my feet. Although I couldn't say he was my wolf, since he roamed where he pleased, he had made himself quite comfortable in the castle I'd inherited. I shrugged. "Maybe I want to cut out the middleman every once in a while." Douglas's frown deepened, and I laughed. "Don't worry, you'll have plenty of work to do as long as you stick around." Douglas opened his mouth to add something, but was interrupted by the entrance of the butler carrying a tray. I thanked the old man as he set down the tray. Then I beckoned Douglas to the chair and poured him a cup of tea. The wolf shifted as I took my seat, which Miss Caroline Bain used to occupy before she passed her home and legacy to me. I sipped my coffee. "If you're suggesting I go back to globe-trotting, I'll tell you that I would love to again one day. Perhaps soon, but right now I think it is best to stay where I am." Douglas's frown went away. What wonders tea did for him sometimes. He was, however, not convinced.
"I'm not suggesting you go globe-trotting, but some time outside of the estate would do you good. Do you ever think about going back to your office?"
I shook my head. I had too many plates spinning to be hopping from one location to another. Here at Rooksmont Castle, I could be who I needed to be and do everything I needed to do. I was Angelica Morgan, who operated a philanthropic trust under billionaire Reginald Hounsen. I was Angelica Morgan, the face of Morgan's Murder, an online community activism group. I was Caroline Bain, who offered advice to people who sought her guidance. Most importantly, though, I was the Morrigan. Goddess of War. I was still getting used to both the idea and the feeling of having her full power within me. As I mused in silence, I realized something. It's almost been a year since I visited Gran and learned about all of this. I waved at nothing in particular. Everything around me was a product of becoming the Morrigan, even my friend sitting across from me. Without finding him, much of what I had learned would not have come to my attention.
"It's hard to believe," Douglas responded.
I sighed and returned to the initial subject. "It's better for me to stay here and continue training." Shug, the druid, was teaching me about my power and the magic in the land. Ted Singh, my bodyguard, taught me how to use my body and fight with weapons to the best of my ability. Just like Douglas had his library in the castle, Teg was beginning to build his armory on the lowest floor. Douglas nodded.
"Yes, that is good."
He sat in silence for a long moment and stared into his tea. What was he thinking about? His actions were strange, given the fact that he was normally so straightforward with me. "What is it, Velez?" Douglas sighed and looked from his teacup to the fire, then at the wolf, then at me.
"There's something else keeping you here, and you're not telling me what it is."
His words brought the truth to mind. He was right. "If it makes you feel any better, I haven't told anyone. Only Shug knows what keeps me here, and that's because he told me about it." Douglas leaned forward.
"Anything I would learn about in a book?"
I shook my head. "I don't think so." Douglas's brows rose, and his eyes seemed to say,
"Well?"
I looked into my coffee for a long moment and considered telling him. A quiet fear had been growing in me ever since Shug had shown me one of the three fountains 3 months ago and warned me that if the gods ever returned to the realm of men, they would seek to destroy the remaining undamaged fountain. And then me after it, I thought. The last undamaged fountain was in the forest on Rooksmont's grounds. Caroline Bain had left the castle to me, not just because I had taken her place with the Way of Seers, but so I could protect it. There was only so much a druid could do to protect the ancient magical fountain against the gods. Someone with godlike power would be needed too. Someone like me. What bothered me most was that I had no damned clue what the fountains did or what destroying them would mean. Shug knew, to an extent, but the likelihood of him sharing anything with me when I wanted it was very low. I would have to wait to find out. Once again, time tested me. I had to practice patience and hope everything turned out the way it was supposed to. I gathered my courage. "Give me some time, Velez. I don't want to explain it until I know more." This was partially the truth, but more than anything, I wanted to protect everyone who didn't know about the fountains. If the gods or whatever the hell else came from beyond the veil parting our worlds wanted to question and torture my friends for information, it was better that they didn't have any information to give. I thought of everyone I wanted to protect. My mother, Helen Morgan, my friends Douglas Velez and Ted Singh, my boss Reginald Hounson, and my colleague Natalie Kimber. I wanted to protect everyone who lived in my home and those who came to see me as Ms. Bain. I wanted to protect my dear friend Simon Lorne. As soon as the image of his face came into my mind, I shoved it away. That was a whole other matter to deal with. Douglas finished his tea and rose from his seat.
"Whenever you're ready, Morgan."
His gentle smile was reassuring.
"I'm here to help."
I smiled back. "I know, Velez. I can always count on you." A moment later, the study was occupied only by the wolf and me. I bent and scratched his head. "I can count on you, too." The wolf nuzzled me with his nose and licked my hand. As I petted him, pressure built in my head. It wasn't due to not having enough coffee or sleep. The consciousnesses of three others pressed against mine. Deep within, my power stirred in response. "It's feeding time," I muttered. I rose from my seat and left the study. The pressure increased as I made my way through the main hall of the castle, which was bustling with activity. In a few days, I would hold a gala. Individuals who sought an audience with Caroline Bain would come for an evening of dinner, dancing, and conversation with me. As a result of my plans, those who lived in my home and worked for me were moving to and fro as they cleaned and put up decorations. Before the gala, however, I had scheduled a live stream for Morgan's murder to answer questions about why I was taking so long to rest in England before going back to remote countries around the world. "I have work to do at home sometimes, too," were the words I planned to use. On top of everything else, I had to read the pile of books Douglas had curated for me. I had training with Shug and Teg every day. In the mornings, I trained with Teg, and under the stars of night, Shug sat with me in one of the castle's towers and said strange, vague things that I was somehow supposed to figure out the meaning of on my own. "I'll need a break before long," I thought. I was on the brink of burnout. I still had my job for Reginald, too. All I wanted was a nice, long, uninterrupted dinner with one man, and that man was Simon Lorne. As I walked through the hall, the eyes of my staff turned in my direction. The warm surge of the Way of Kings told me they were under my influence. I met their gazes, smiling as I nodded in greeting. They returned my smiles before they went back to their work. The two guards at the enormous double front doors of the castle stepped aside, and I exited with the wolf on my heels. I traversed the gardens, which had been transformed from their previously eerie, haunted, and overgrown appearance to abundant and vibrant with the help of on-site gardeners. Even beneath an overcast sky and the leaves drenched from overnight rain, the garden exuded peace and beauty. A black cat darted in front of me as I walked the path. "It reminds me of your garden, Gran," I said to one of the three women sharing my consciousness.
"I love when you bring me here, Angelica, dear."
The warmth of Gran's presence filled me at the same time as her words. I had gone to the garden because I enjoyed it, and it reminded me of Gran, but also because Gran needed to be there. With three other people inside my mind, I could no longer just take into account what I wanted and needed. Until I was able to operate as the Morrigan without their help, I had to take care of them, too. For Gran, this meant walks in the garden and drinking a drop of gin now and again. Caroline Bain was partial to fresh French pastries eaten slowly, and cats, which was why there were so many roaming the grounds. Mirren liked her tobacco like she liked her men. Cheap, dirty, and unfiltered. That was a line I wasn't willing to cross, which meant I'd had to make up for it by developing a taste for the rot-gut grain alcohol she had also been partial to. It wasn't so bad. Walking in the garden after my morning duties had become the first part of my daily ritual. This was followed by a pastry for breakfast with a cup of coffee laced with liquor. This ritual gave the three of them an opening to speak to me. Unless something dire was going on, they mostly remained silent during the rest of the day so I could hear my own thoughts. If I called upon them, they could speak. Otherwise, it was too crowded having three other voices in my head. It had been difficult at first. I chuckled as I remembered going to the bathroom for the first time without warning them. Feeding time, as I called it, was my opportunity to care for them, easing their reduced circumstances with things they liked, and for me to ask questions and seek direction. This morning, however, the main thing on my mind was not my role as the goddess of war. Simon Lorne's face would not get out of my head. "I wonder what he'll think of this," I said to the three women as I sipped my Irish coffee. Simon was an accepting person, but he had always known me as a woman who wasn't that into hard liquor. If anything, he would be alarmed at the change rather than the increase in the amount I was drinking. Of course, my goddess powers meant my liver was safe, but could my heart take it if Simon freaked the fuck out when I finally gathered the courage to tell him everything that had changed for me in the last year? I chuckled again. I wonder what he'd think if I told him I have three old women living in my head. It was a thought I had to myself, but since my guides were present, they heard it too. I want to tell him. I don't know where to start. Gran responded first.
Start at the beginning, Angelica dear. It is often the simplest way. Start with Haiti.
A result of the women being in my head was that they also had access to my memories. They knew that I had first felt there was a greater purpose in store for me when I had gone to Haiti as a 19-year-old, trying to figure out what to do with her life. I had met Simon Lorne there, and almost 11 years later, we were not only friends, but something more. We hadn't defined it since leaving Africa recently. We both knew, however, that we had feelings we wanted to explore. Since then, we had been on a whopping 2 dates. Simon had tried to ask questions, and I had tried to answer, but I had ended up being too scared. "What the hell is wrong with me?" I thought. I was able to kill ruthless men who committed genocide. I had faced some of the worst circumstances in the world in the last year, and yet I was somehow unable to tell the guy I liked the truth about who I was. "You're afraid he won't want you anymore," came the voice of Caroline Bain. Her words did not speak a new truth to me. I had acknowledged the fear of being rejected by Simon long ago. At last, Mirren entered the conversation. "Well, if he doesn't like the truth, then he can find someone else." Despite the fear building in me at Mirren's words, I had to grin. Gran and Caroline spoke in turn, but each expressed a similar sentiment. It was better that Simon Lorne never know. It protected him. Mirren leaned on the side of telling him. If he thought I was crazy after everything he'd seen, then the worst he could do is tell my secret to other people. Who would believe him if he did? I chuckled to myself again. Just think, Simon Lorne doesn't know he has a goddess for a girlfriend. I finished my coffee as Douglas entered the garden.
"Sorry to interrupt, Morgan, but something has come up."
"Always moving," I said to the three women as they faded from my consciousness. Mirren spoke one last time.
"Good thing the Way of Conquerors is in you, then."
Chapter 2. Strife greets a new spring. Sorrow sings in summer. Fables fold in autumn. From such a wellspring of winter shall be birthed a new queen. Her horses are white like snow, tasseled in gold like the sun. She is dawn riding to the battle, with a cry unleashing a storm. Quiet and quaking, the realm of men trembles. The gods greet them with wicked smiles. They do not see the Phantom Queen or her sword. Song of the Morrigan. Most of the once empty and dust-laden rooms in Rooksmont Castle had been converted since I inherited it. One of these rooms was once a small dining room that had been refitted as a high-tech conference room where I took my video conference calls with billionaire financier Reginald Townsend and my admin assistant, Natalie Kimber. Douglas had been included in these meetings since Morgan's murder became significant to my job. I logged into the call, and after seeing Natalie's bright smile and hearing Reggie's enthusiastic greeting, I asked Douglas to go through the agenda for the meeting. Douglas sifted through pieces of paper in a file.
"There have been reports of demonstrations against one of our pharmaceutical companies. People are objecting to how the company administers charitable assistance in other countries."
Douglas looked at me.
"You just went to several remote locations around the world, Morgan. So you know how needed our help is."
I nodded. It frustrated me that, even with all the good work we had shown on Morgan's murder, some people failed to see that what we were doing was much needed in some places. Douglas continued.
"The company is offering that new treatment for serious viral infections. The drug made it through the approval processes for the NHS and WHO, but it requires a specific timetable of administration for each dose. Otherwise, it can have adverse effects and create complications, as you all know very well."
I'd been following the drug's progress through the approvals system. In my career as an EMT, I'd learned that avoiding adverse effects and complications was always worth the extra work. However, people in need of help were not always able to wait for it to come for them. Some had limited time on Earth. I thought back to my time as an EMT, and then to my work under Reginald while I was helping Meath Medical Supply in their battle against Grian Consolidated and Rachel Kestrel. "What are they protesting?" I asked. Douglas shuffled his papers.
"More time is being taken up than you think. To prevent complications, the company requires either their own personnel or people who have been trained by them to administer the drug. This has slowed how fast the medication has rolled out and determined who has access to it. Let me tell you, it's not very many people. Unfortunately, It is the only way to ensure the drug isn't hurting anyone and can save the lives of people where other methods of treatments haven't done what they needed.
What else? I prodded, sensing with the way of Sears that there was something more. Douglas sighed.
You know what it's like to be online, Morgan.
I nodded. Even after 3 months of being home, trolls still stalked Morgan's murder, calling me a white savior and a colonizer for establishing medical clinics in parts of the world that needed them. Douglas continued.
A number of online groups, most of them anti-establishment, are fabricating conspiracy theories about how and why the drug is being rolled out. Many are claiming it to be a colonial plot and oppressive power play, even though the company's policies, which we support, are in place for the sake of people's safety.
I leaned back and sighed. Here we go again. I was used to setbacks as a result of online fuss. The negative stirrings could get to me if I wasn't careful. I noticed, as I looked at Douglas, my hands were clenching the arms of my chair. A moment later, he slid a cup of coffee across to me. I sipped it gratefully as Douglas voiced his concerns.
Not only will this affect the drug rollout, but it will damage the company image in general, and may draw them into a conflict they can't win.
He looked at Reginald on the screen.
I'm not sure that money alone is going to solve this.
Reginald nodded along, but it was Natalie who spoke up. Nobody wins. Douglas nodded and sighed again.
We've got a problem without a real solution. We ignore the conspiracy theories and we look guilty. We address them, and it gives them attention and legitimacy.
Natalie's expression was solemn. I feel like every time we have these meetings, we're in a war room. It never stops. Her tone of voice did not indicate a complaint. It was a simple truth. We were all feeling the weight of our problems never really going away. We sat in silence for a long moment, which gave me time to think. It may not be such a bad idea to take this to my online presence, I said. There is a large part of the community that trusts us because they've seen what we've done around the world. Our work speaks for us better than anything else. With my EMT experience and my work around the world, I had plenty of reason to be right about defending who I thought was doing well in the medical industry. Natalie nodded as she jotted down notes. A slow, pleased smile spread on Reginald's lips.
That could be it, Angelica. Morgan's murder could very well legitimize the reasons for the issue.
I turned to Douglas and found him frowning. You don't like the idea, do you? Douglas looked concerned.
No matter how you put it, Morgan, reasonable people don't discuss things on the internet.
I wondered for a moment if he believed this based on his past experience. Once a best-selling author, Douglas had met the end of his popularity after claiming his stories about the supernatural were not fictional. I remembered reading forums where he had argued with many long-standing readers over the truthful nature of his writing. It had not, in the end, gone well for him. This, I decided, was a different situation. I summoned the three women sharing my consciousness. What do you three think? I could feel Gran and Mirren present, but it was Caroline's voice I heard.
Do what feels wise.
At Reggie's request, I made a great effort to prepare for my announcement on Morgan's murder. While sitting in a room next to where we had the conference, the woman who cleaned my room and laid out my clothes did my makeup. She lived at Rooksmont full time. Having staff was yet another thing I still hadn't quite gotten used to. I thought of my mother, who would have taken it all in her stride. I should call her soon, I thought. The three women in my head were still present. Gran spoke first.
Your mother misses you.
How do you know? I asked.
I imagine it to be true.
I pictured Gran sipping from a cup of tea with gin poured into it. Caroline spoke to me next.
Go slow, Angelica. Remember that most people are only half paying attention through most of life, and even then, there's no surety they won't be stupid.
Caroline Bain was right. Most of the people who came to see Miss Bain saw exactly what they wanted to see. They didn't see Angelica Morgan, or Crow Lady, as some had decided to call me. They saw whoever was going to tell them what they wanted to hear. When I didn't meet that expectation, they would leave the castle in a huff and soon forget all about me. Mirin struck into the conversation in her usual forceful way. At least your people are helping, Ange. What are a bunch of basement-dwelling keyboard jockeys doing making trouble for you anyway? At least you're doing something about the world's problems instead of bitching about them on the internet. I sighed, but didn't tell Mirin that what she was saying wasn't helpful. The warmth of the Way of Kings filled me at the same time as Gran's voice.
You've gotten used to the Way of Kings smoothing the way, Angelica dear. When using your influence online, the effect will be muted, so you need to make sure you choose every word carefully. Be earnest without being angry. Be sympathetic to concerns without being disingenuous. Your previous work will show that your actions back up what you say.
I leaned into her warmth and encouragement. No pressure, I said aloud. Just choose every damn word as carefully as possible.
Gran chuckled in my head. And don't worry about Mirin. She's just whining.
Mirin's growl sounded a second later. What are you saying, bitch? I laughed, which startled the woman doing my makeup. She had no clue three women were talking to me inside my head. Sorry. I stifled another laugh and told her she could leave. You too, I told the three in my head. Thank you for all of your help, but I'd rather speak to the public without three other voices in my head. With brushed hair, a pressed blazer, and makeup done, I sat in the conference room in front of the camera. Douglas stood nearby as I began the broadcast. I know it's been a while since I last updated all of you on what's going on over here at Morgan's murder headquarters. I smiled at the camera. Well, we don't have a headquarters. We've been taking our work all over the world, as many of you have seen. Now we're remaining here in England for some time to solve some problems in our own communities. Douglas nodded along as if he approved my intro. I summoned the power deep within me and willed the Way of Kings to have an effect even through the screens dividing me from the people I was speaking to. Part of my job while here in England is to take care of the funding for the companies and organizations who take care of the community. As many of you know, I was an EMT before I took on this role. I understand the great need for thorough medical care that saves lives without causing more damage. Although much of medicine starts out as experimental, human lives are not for experimentation. This means that sometimes innovative treatments take time to roll out and aren't available to the larger population right away, as we would all like them to be. I paused, feeling the warmth of the Way of Kings surging up within me. Under public speaking circumstances, I could read the room and direct my words as necessary. Here, with Douglas as my only physical audience, I had no damned clue if what I was saying would be taken well. I would like you all to remember that the pharmaceutical company is not out to discriminate against certain individuals, but instead is tasked with making sure this new drug is used appropriately and safely. I shared a warm smile. Remember how far we've come when we work together. Remember what division does to us. A drug like this one used incorrectly becomes dangerous, and the last thing any of us want is to come with the intention to help and then have that intention endanger patients. I finished and looked at Douglas, whose brows were knitted together in concern.
That was good, Morgan.
But, I prodded.
But like I said earlier, any reasonable person won't discuss things on the internet.
I thought about retorting. I thought about telling Douglas he should go set up a press conference for me then and invite everyone who should hear what I had to say. I refrained and waited for him to continue. A small half-smile appeared on my friend's face.
But you aren't just any person. You're the Morrigan, he chuckled. Gods can do whatever the hell they want.
Although I knew Douglas's words were meant to be a joke, I couldn't help feeling offended. I sure as hell couldn't do whatever I wanted, and I wasn't a full goddess. I was just as human as before. Much had changed, but I was still Angelica Morgan. I wanted to say all these things, but before they came to mind, Douglas left the room. Probably for the best, I muttered. Gods, I needed a break.
The Fifth Morrigan. The three women born to the goddess Ernmas were stripped of their power and caged in the other world. The world away from the realm of men felt like a cage.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?